Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
I'm Dori Shafrir.
And are we experts?
No, we're not.
We're just two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Serums.
Welcome back to Los Angeles, Dori.
Thank you, Kate.
You were in Disney World.
I sure was.
How was that for you?
It was fun.
A touch of hesitation.
You know, it's interesting. Kate, as you know, my husband and I have been trying to have kids for like 2 years.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kids at Disney World. And we both had a similar revelation after seeing like the 20th kid get yelled at by their parents or like throw a tantrum. And we were like, you know what? We should just try to enjoy this period.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say, like, seeing all these families was hard. That's such an awesome revelation.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, we were like, you know, kids are a pain in the ass sometimes. They like, are. They're great. We want them, obviously.
Yes, totally.
But, like, they're a lot of fucking work. And we should just appreciate this time where we don't have this responsibility and just try to, like, enjoy our lives.
I love that revelation. So much.
Thank
and I
you.
Think it's really powerful for anybody who's going through the experience of trying to get pregnant and have children, whether it's through IVF, whether it's through old peen in the vagina. What do you call the old standard, just a
P&V?
P&V. That's the doctor's choice of calling it.
Mm-hmm.
Or any way that you're trying to have kids, adoption, fostering.
Turkey baster.
I know that is the way it works.
Craigslist.
I think it's important to, not even just having kids, like remembering that anytime.
Yes.
Just let's, instead of stressing out about the future, just enjoying that moment. Dori, what an impressive revelation.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it was, because it's so easy to let infertility like take over your life. And I think there have been times in the last couple of years where I've definitely felt like it was taking over my life. It still kind of feels like it's taking over my life, but it's also like, we've basically been dealing with this for almost the entire time we've been married.
Wow.
And it's like, is that what I want to look back on our first couple of years of marriage? It's just like, oh, all we did was think about IVF.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to just be like, all right, I don't have kids. So like, I'm in a party.
Yeah. No. You're going to be out till 4 a.m. every night.
Yeah. No, but I am going to be like, okay, I don't have kids. I can like do some shit that I might not have been able to do if I did have kids right now. And, you know, hopefully that will also mean like volunteering and doing things that aren't just about me.
Yeah.
Which I think will also like help just in general, help the world, but also help me. So that was my biggest takeaway from Disney World.
That's
an unexpected but welcome takeaway.
I love that you both. How did you guys reveal that to each other?
Well, Matt turned to me and was like again after we had seen some, you know, some child screaming or whatever.
I've been there.
He was like, "Do you ever like it's like are you ever like I forget exactly how we phrase it. It wasn't like thankful, but it's like, it's kind of nice not to have kids, right? Like, it's kind of nice not to be here with kids. And I was like I was looking around and I was like, God, it's like some, not everyone, but some of these parents look like pretty miserable and like overwhelmed. And I was like, okay, we're just gonna go on Pirates of the Caribbean and chill out.
So great.
So yeah, so, you know, hopefully, knock on wood, we will get to the point where we are also like getting really annoyed with our kids. Like, I would like to be in a place where I'm annoyed with my children,
yeah,
because I have them. But since we're not there yet, I just feel like, okay, just gonna live my life.
That is so, one Zen Disney World experience.
I mean, you know, I think we were also there one day too many. But the last day was it suddenly got like twice as crowded as it had been, and it was also like hotter and more humid, and we were just like, what is happening? But overall, it was fun. And also, I kind of had a fun time. We decided that we're going to go. My brother and sister, who my brother has two kids. My sister is about to have her second kid. And we've decided that next spring break, we're all going to go on a big family vacation. And so it was kind of fun to walk around. And like, I kept texting my sister and being like, we're at Animal Kingdom. I think Maddie's going to love it.
And will the family vacation be to Disney World?
Yes. The family vacation will be to Disney World. And I kept being like we were walking around and, you know, being like, oh, Sam, my nephew, like, he's going to love this and we got to do this. So it's sort of fun to think about like planning that trip.
Yeah.
And seeing it like through their eyes, because that is the joy of Disney when you have kids, like the joy of.
I cry every time I take my kids, like not out of misery.
No, totally.
We had a very intimate moment with Minnie Mouse at Disneyland last week, and I was just weirdly weeping.
Oh,
but that is very, although it's magical just as a grown up.
I
enjoy it alone.
Oh, you and Matt. Yeah, Matt also enjoys it alone.
I love Disneyland.
That's so funny. Yeah, you know, we had breakfast at Chef Mickey's.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, Mickey cooked for us.
Wow, you guys are living your best life,
yeah,
as Oprah would
really
say.
We really are. Yeah, so how was your week while I was off cavorting with...
Mine was different than yours.
Go on.
I have been... Dory, here's something I've come to learn about my anxiety.
Oh.
And I've learned it numerous times, and then I always forget. It's like a chronic illness in that it flares up, and then it will flare down.
Yep.
And I'm in a flare up right now,
and
this has been how it is my whole life, but really got really bad toward the end of college. And I have made some positive choices. Well, one, the biggest one is that I got a good psychiatrist recommendation.
Oh my goodness.
And I called them.
Yay.
And I made an appointment.
Oh, good.
So I'm very excited to be going to meet with a psychiatrist, because I have been on different anti-anxiety medications before, but it's always been kind of through my general practitioner. And I really want to like thoughtfully,
yes,
approach kind of getting the help I need.
I love that.
So I feel, and it's... when I have gone to a psychiatrist in the past, it's never really been a positive experience. It's always,
yeah,
felt very cold and quick. And so I'm hopeful that this person who I was referred to will be great.
Were you referred by a friend?
By numerous women.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah.
That seems like...
It seems very
exciting.
That
seems very promising.
So that was my big step, was kind of like trying to talk myself down off the anxiety ledge I've been on for a while, actually.
Was there something that precipitated it?
It's related to my health. I have a lot of anxiety related to my health. I think that is kind of a lasting impact of my mom dying.
Yeah.
I've always been really anxious about my health. And I also lost a friend a couple years ago to cancer in a very kind of sudden and unexpected way. I mean, obviously, it's always sudden and not always sudden, but it's always very unexpected. But my anxiety and my obsessive thoughts always often circle back to like, I'm dying. This one thing is
Right.
A very big illness. And so I'm in that pattern right now. And it's not fun.
No, that sounds bad.
It's really struck. And then the other challenging thing I feel about anxiety is that when you talk about it with people, anxiety is not rational.
Yeah.
So I always feel like I sound off my rocker when I'm describing what I'm anxious about.
Right.
Because any person who's in a stable state of mind would just be like, oh, that doesn't sound like a big deal. Why don't you just call your doctor and blah, blah, blah. But when your anxious thoughts are firing, it's hard to explain how debilitating anxiety can be.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like explaining a dream to somebody. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it only makes sense to you.
Yes.
So that's where I'm at.
That's great.
Mental health wise. But I'm excited to get some help. I'm also like kind of redabbling and going back to therapy and just trying to find somebody. Which also makes me feel excited. And then also just trying to remember what my best practices are for keeping myself, like, knowing what makes the anxiety worse, which is like not sleeping.
Yep.
Caffeine.
Yep.
Filling my brain with information. So it's not quite Disney World, but wild ride.
It sounds like another, but like a good revelation.
The relief I felt after just making the appointment with a psychiatrist was such a, like, I did it. And then I will eventually address, like, the health thing that's making me spiral. I will go to my doctor. So that feels good. That, like,
that's
calmed me down. Yes. And I have, like, a lovely people who are who I feel like I can talk to about it, which is also very helpful. I think it can be such an isolating experience that having people who also experience something similar is very helpful. So if you don't have that, let me be that person for you.
Oh,
listeners.
Thank you.
And you, Dory.
Thank you, Kate.
And you, Sammy. Anybody in this booth.
Just hit us up.
I gotcha.
Yep.
Well, and speaking of, if you do want to reach out about your anxiety, you can call our voicemail, 781-591-0390.
Yeah, just leave us a voicemail. And we might play it on a mini episode.
Yes. Yes. We've been getting so many wonderful ones. So thank you, everybody who's called in.
You can also email us, though, at forever35podcast@gmail.com. And we might read your email on a mini episode. But you should know that we do read all of the emails and we take them into consideration when we are putting together the show.
Yes.
So thank you for all of your product recommendations and questions. And it's just it's great to hear from all of you.
General reaching out is really awesome.
We love it. But you can also join our Facebook group.
Listen. There is now a Forever 35 parenting subgroup.
How is that?
It's awesome.
I joined it for 2 seconds so I could put it in the like recommended groups from our main group and then I left.
Great. It's really supportive.
Yay.
And the conversations are really interesting.
It's great.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Not to be confused with the My Favorite Murder Forever 35 crossover spinoff group.
I haven't joined that group yet, but I got to get in there.
Oh, I'm in it.
I am a My Favorite Murder fan.
Yeah. You know, people talk about like, what are true crime podcasts you listen to? And, you know, that's all kinds of other things.
I went to start one last night. My husband's out of town. And then I had to like turn it off immediately because it's about the Golden State Killer.
Oh,
and it was like, how did this murderer break into California homes? And I was like, oh, nope, not ready for this.
Yeah, I actually started reading. I downloaded like the sample of that book.
I'm very excited about that book.
And I was like, you know what? I'm not really in the headspace right now where I can keep reading this book about a serial killer whose identity has never been solved, who cased people's homes. His favorite home was like two houses in from the corner. And I was like, that's my house.
No.
So, yeah.
And it's California.
So I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to read this right now. Anyway, just also a reminder that all of our products that we talk about on the podcast are mentioned on our website. We put them on our website, forever35podcast.com. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Forever 35 Podcast, on Twitter at Forever 35 Pod. And if you didn't sign up for our newsletter yet, sorry, you missed the April one, but
you always say,
I mean, look, I'm just saying, like,
you gotta
snooze,
get in.
You lose.
Yeah, the giveaway was dope.
The giveaway was amazing. And we have another one lined up for May already, FYI. So if you want to get in on that, plus everything else we put in the newsletter, which is awesome.
Oh, and I have a new favorite product I want to talk about in the newsletter.
I can't wait.
It's very affordable.
Yeah, there's stuff that we put in the newsletter that we don't talk about on the podcast.
Oh, so much.
You can sign up at forever35podcast.com. Just click on mailing list and you will get signed up. So, Kate.
Yes.
I have a little bit of self-promotion to do right now.
No. Typical. No, I'm joking. That's great. I'm excited for your self-promotion.
Well, so my paperback came out on Tuesday.
Your paperback of your book, Startup.
My paperback of my book, Startup, a Novel by Dori Shafrir.
So exciting.
Thank you.
I think what's I didn't realize in the book world is that when you have a hardcover book, that comes out first, and then A year later, paperback comes. I thought they all kind of came out at the same time.
Yeah, no, it's like when a movie comes out in the theater and then it's on DVD.
Yeah. So now people can get your book in a whole new form.
Correct. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't buy hardcovers. A, they're expensive. B, they're heavy. Like, it's hard to get on the subway with a hardcover.
It's true.
I mean, let's be honest. So I love that it's out in paperback now.
Me too.
And so we were thinking, in honor of this momentous occasion,
big deal,
we would talk a little bit about how both of us wrote our books.
Yes, because what listeners might not know is that before we were a podcasting team, we were a tiny writing team.
Yeah, a two-person writing group.
Yeah. How did we come to that?
So first of all, I think we have mentioned that we met on Tumblr.
Yes, we met on the internet.
Like, eight or so.
But let's be clear. I was a fan of your work. I read Gawker religiously. You were essentially a celebrity, an internet celebrity.
I was a micro celebrity in a very specific corner of the New York media world.
Yes, but for me, who was hanging on over there, it was very exciting that you existed on Tumblr. And then to become your real life friend has just been such a blessing.
Well, I always loved your writing too.
Look at this.
Yeah. So this is just a mutual admiration society.
This is going to be a very
flagellating?
I was going to say self-flagellating, but
flagellating means farting. Flagellating means like we're beating ourselves up.
And then what I was trying to say is self-flating.
Self-flating.
But that's fine. Yeah.
Autofillating?
Something dirty.
Yeah.
Something sexy and nasty.
This is not that kind of podcast.
No.
No, but then we both moved to LA. You moved to LA before me.
Yeah, because of my husband's career.
Right.
And I was able to keep doing my full-time job from New York at the office here in LA.
Yeah, and then I moved here, I think about a year after you moved here.
About that.
And I remember we met at a bar.
Yeah.
And you were very pregnant, I think.
Was I?
I think you were pregnant.
I was pregnant in 2012, which might have been when we met.
Or maybe you had just had your second kid.
I was either birthing or about to birth.
Well, because I moved here in the spring of 2013.
So if you moved here in spring 2013, I had just had my second child.
Okay, so you just had your second child.
And I was back on the drinking train.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yes. I just remember like really hitting it off and being like, it's so fun that like this person who I've known on the internet for so long, like maybe we can actually be IRL friends.
Yeah. And then we did it.
And then the writing group happened. I don't even really remember. Like, had we been talking about working on stuff?
Yes. And I think maybe it had come up on Facebook and maybe in one of the writing Facebook groups we were in or something.
Oh, okay.
And you would just reach out and be like, let's meet. I have an idea for a novel. And I was really like, my dream was just to write this book about having a dead mom.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to do it. I knew the sec before my mom even died, it was something I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But I had nothing.
Right.
I had zero content. I just had a dead mom.
Yeah. And so I think we ended up meeting about once a month.
Yeah, we would share.
We basically did like a writing workshop with each other. Like we would send each other pages and then we would bring the pages to our meetings. I feel like we met a few times at that weird coffee shop that doesn't exist anymore. The like Clockwork Orange-esque coffee shop on La Brea.
Oh, yes.
Graffiti.
The all-white
with
one.
With the crazy rules.
Yeah, and they had like $7 flat whites.
Yes.
That were like 1 ounce.
Yeah, and they were like, they were basically like, if you bring any of your own food or drink in here, you'll be banned for life. They are now a Sweetgreen.
Good.
I'll have you know.
Good.
Yeah, and I just remember, first of all, it was, I found your feedback so helpful.
Wow, which I don't have a lot of confidence. So I do remember you telling me that, and I was like, she's lying.
No, I was not lying. Your feedback was really helpful. I feel like you really helped me, like, figure out the story and figure out the characters. And I think my biggest revelation about the characters was because of something you said. Initially I had had another character named Abby.
Oh,
remember Abby?
I do. I related to her so much.
I know. She was very relatable. But I remember you saying to me, both Abby and this other character, Sabrina, you're like, they seem really similar. Like they're both kind of passive and unhappy with their lives. And like, you just, you pointed out that they were essentially the same person, just like 7 or 8 years apart. And I was like, oh my God, they're the same person.
Yeah. That was a smart move that you made in your book.
And I combined them.
Yeah. It was really, it made everything so much better.
And it was like, everything just clicked. And it was because of what you had said.
Oh, but you made the decision.
Yeah, but like, I don't think I would have gotten there if it hadn't been for you.
You also devastated me because one of the original characters from the book, who was like kind of the main focus for a long time,
Millet.
He's not really in your story that
much.
Yeah,
he's really a side character now.
Which is just so interesting. I feel like what I learned so much in working with you is the process of writing. You don't start with a final product.
Totally.
I thought I would just like make this polished thing right off the bat.
Yeah.
And instead, it's like it's like a puzzle. You just piece everything together. And that was a really good learning experience for me.
I mean, I remember with your stuff.
Oh boy.
Like you were writing nonfiction.
Yes.
So you didn't have to have a full product, but you had to have something, and you had to have like a sense of what the whole book would look like, which is a kind of a challenge.
Yeah, so I had to, when we were meeting, I was working on a book proposal, which I then, that was what then I used to sell my book to publishers with my agent doing. Yeah,
but
it's
you
not
also
me doing it.
Didn't you also use it to get your agent?
Yes, I mean I came to my agent kind of in an alternative way, in that like she and I had a relationship before. Like working together, we are pretty good friends.
How had you met?
Well, Dory, I met my agent at a Comic-Con party because she represents women that I met through the Twilight fandom community.
I never heard this
you
story.
Didn't know that?
No.
And then we discovered that we lived 2 blocks away and we were like, let's get coffee.
Oh my gosh.
And then she knew I was a writer and she was always very open. Like whenever you have a thing, bring it to me and let's talk.
Wait,
so.
I never knew this. I always knew that you knew her.
No.
But I never knew that you met her in this amazing fashion.
At a party at Comic-Con. Yeah.
Sidebar, I actually meant to snap a picture, but I was driving. I saw someone with a license plate frame yesterday that said, I drive like a Cullen.
Maybe. Was it a Volvo that they were driving?
It was a BMW.
Interesting choice because Edward drives a Volvo. I don't remember what the other Cullens drive. That's interesting. I drive like a Cullen.
I know. I was like, Edward, what does this mean?
He drove very fast, but safe.
Oh.
And he was always playing a French classical composer, Claire de Lune. He would always play Claire de Lune in the car.
Okay. But I was like, wait a second. I know what this means.
I'll have you know, Sammy is laughing at me. Sammy, did you not know I'm a Twilight fan? Oh, boy. That's a whole other podcast I need to start. Yes, that's how I met. That's how I met my agent. But I didn't have anything to show for many years. And one thing that was very helpful that you did was I was writing these like very weepy, emotional pieces. And you were like, this is lovely, but what is it? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, what is this book? I can't just write a book that's just 15 chapters of sadness.
Right.
So I actually, that really helped me figure out how to structure the book I wanted to write.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So thanks forever for that.
You're so welcome. I mean, I just remember thinking you nailed the tone so well.
Mm. Thank you.
Yeah. And for those of you who have not read Kate's book, even if you don't have a dead mom.
You don't have to have one.
You don't have to have a dead mom. I don't have a dead mom.
No, thank God.
And I loved your book.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
There's some funny parts. It's fairly funny overall.
It is funny.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the anecdote that always sticks out the most to me is the dog groomer. So perfect.
That was hard. One of the first chapters I wrote is how I had to tell the people in my mom's life that she had died. And like, first you do the friends and the family, but then you have to do like the mechanic and like the mailman and all these people who knew my mom very intimately.
Yeah. And your mom had lived in the same town for many years.
Yes. And she was a very kind person who really took the time to get to know people. So when I told the dog groomer started crying. And
you had, didn't you have the dog with you?
I had my dog. The dog was a monster, like a growling shithead, this dog that we had. So I was like handing him over. She was crying. She held my hand. We were in the dog grooming world. So there's just dogs being groomed everywhere. And then I accidentally like bumped into a thing of collars. And it was so awkward. And it's so draining having to, there's this weird thing that happens when you've lost somebody where you have to suddenly be the support system for the people who are just finding out.
Yeah. And you have to do it over and over and over again.
Yeah. And it's a really weird and an unexpected position to be in. And I'm sure people listening have experienced that. And it also can be hilarious. Like it also can just open yourself up to very bizarre moments with other people.
Totally.
But very human. Very human.
Yeah. So too. I thought you just did that so
thank you.
Well.
I will say also, I feel like one thing that And this may only be interesting to two people. I don't know how many people who are interested in creative careers or whatever. But one thing looking back is how long it took. Like how long we were just writing these like drafts of things that we hadn't, you know, before we had actually sold, that turned them into books and sold them.
Yeah.
We're just meeting and writing and there's so much revising and shaping and changing that goes into what you write. And also I'm assuming that's the same for any art form and any kind of work that people do. And that was really eye-opening to me.
I think that's a really good point. Especially now as I look back, I sold my book based on 100 pages and an outline. And then my book was due like 7 months later and it pretty much changed. It radically changed.
Yeah.
Even in those 7 months. And I think you do just need to give yourself some time to sort of like marinate in your book. And I think especially like for me as someone who has been working on the internet for so long,
same.
We're so used to the instant gratification of the internet and writing on the internet. And like, yes, it's a grind and it takes so much out of you, but there's also, you do get that instant gratification. Like when you're working on something, it goes up the next day or that day.
I mean, sometimes I would be writing because I also was an internet writer for VH1 and now I still do, but we would be writing 10 blog posts a day.
Yeah.
You know, like individually. So you just are constantly churning up content.
Yeah.
And this was a totally different experience.
Totally different. And there was definitely a part of me that felt like I had something to prove.
Interesting.
In terms of like, well, look, I can finish.
You proved it, I think.
Oh, I fucking proved it. No, just this like, I can write like a longer, bigger project because it's a completely different mindset. I'm not saying one is better than the other. It just was like, this wasn't something I'd done before. Yeah. And I was like, I want to fucking do it. What advice would you give someone?
Oh, I was just going to ask you that.
Oh my God. Well, I asked you first, so you have to answer.
Advice for someone who wanted to write a book or just wants to be a writer or pursue writing as a professional career or...
I was actually interested about what advice you would give someone who wants to find a writing partner and be in the sort of like writing group. Like what do you think like our best practices were?
Well, you and I are unique because we knew each other in real life and decided to kind of pair off. But I do think there are some really great places online where crit groups form that are really positive experiences for people, whether it's different writing organizations or sometimes they're even like agents who kind of...
Oh, that's cool.
I'll look for the specifics because I'm pulling this off the top of my head. But there are definitely ways to meet people. When my mom was sick, I lived at home for about 9 months, and I wasn't, it's a long story. I was working on the weekends and then at home in Boston with my mom, and I took a writing class on Gotham Writers Workshop. And that was really helpful because I met other people, and I also got feedback from a professional writing instructor, and it was very helpful. So I think, or just like find someone, if you, there's someone in your life, like I was actually very nervous to work with you because I, again, it's my own confidence level. I was like, this is embarrassing to have to show somebody the like shit writing I'm doing, right? Like I'm not showing you the finished product. I was showing you really embarrassing, not well-written things. And it was really helpful to make myself vulnerable in that way. Because I got more comfortable doing it. And I think that's such an important part of like life in general.
Yeah.
Just being like, oh, I'm gonna reveal the like not perfectly curated part of me. And that's that was really, I'm glad I did it. But I was scared. And I've like turned people away who want to share writing because I'm so embarrassed by what I'm working on. Oh. I'm working on this side of myself. But anyway, it's vulnerable.
Yeah, it's really vulnerable.
What advice would you give if someone is like, I want to write a book? Because that seems like such a daunting, almost mythical thing to do. And it is hard.
It is hard.
What would be like the basic first three things you would tell somebody to do?
I would say make sure you know the story that you want to tell.
Ooh.
Whether it's a fiction or nonfiction book. Two, I would say make sure that this is something that you're willing to live with for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah.
Books are a very long-term endeavor. And three, yeah, I mean, I think what you just said, like, know that you're going to have to be really vulnerable, and that's really hard. And like, you might work on something for a really long time and it might not get published, and you have to be okay with that.
Is there a book or something that you've read that really you come back to as a writer or that you love that inspired you?
Oh, good question.
There might not be anything.
In terms of like process or just,
I just know like for me,
yeah,
I read Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, and at first I was like, eye roll, like this is going to be cheesy.
Yeah.
And then I read it and it was so meaningful and so helpful.
You recommended that to me. I remember. And I
loved it.
I thought it was really good too. And it's, that book is a lot about vulnerability.
Yes. And it's a good book about, it applies to anything.
Yeah.
I felt like it was just good life advice.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
Yeah. But I don't know if there's any, I mean, Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott's also a good one. But
people like that one.
Yeah. But that Elizabeth Gilbert book just rocked me.
Yeah. I feel like that book is like actionable. Like she gives you things that you can actually do.
Yeah. It's like a good pep talk.
Yeah, totally.
So if you're a person who's like lingering in your creativity and you want to kind of do more,
yeah,
check that book out.
Have you listened to her podcast?
I do listen to it. It's lovely.
I haven't listened, but it seems like it would be great.
I also love, if we're recommending podcasts with writers, Dear Sugar.
Oh, sure.
With old Cheryl Strayed.
Old Cheryl.
Love her. Cheryl, come on the pod. Yeah.
Consider this an open invitation.
Yeah, anytime. You too, Liz Gilbert. You know what? Anyone. All are welcome here.
Any best-selling author. Come on.
Whose books have made me cry.
Yeah. Well, I'm just really glad that we did that.
I am too. And then what happened was, from writing those books together, we were like, we get along.
Yeah.
Should we make other things? And then here we are.
And here we are, doing a podcast.
And still writing. Still updating a website.
Writing. Yeah.
And still working on our own projects.
Yeah.
Oh,
more on that later.
Oh my God, mine is a mess.
Well, you know, we've had other stuff going on.
That's true. I've had anxiety.
Should we pause for a word from our sponsor?
Yes, let's.
Great.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. That sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift, all while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups, still without the underwire, to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s. But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
Oh, so our guest this week is Shadi Petosky.
Speaking of creative, inspirational people.
Gosh, you guys are going to love this conversation. Here's Shadi. So today we are thrilled to welcome Shadi Petosky to the podcast.
Hi.
Hi, Shadi.
Hi.
I'm just going to read your bio real quick so everyone knows who you are. Shadi is a writer and owns the production company Puny with Chris Hardwick. She was co-creator and showrunner of Danger and Eggs on Amazon and is currently executive producer for 12 Forever on Netflix.
Yeah, that's a bio.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah. Yay. So We were just talking before we started recording about organization and calendars and stuff.
Yeah, and the reason we were talking about that is because you invited me on this podcast and I completely missed it. And you waited here and I didn't come.
We did, but we ended up recording a couple other episodes.
Okay, good.
But we were like, it got to the point where we're like, I hope everything's okay.
Yeah. No, it was fine. I just... because we had changed the date.
Yes, and the time. Yeah,
the time, yeah. And I just, wait, is that how it got screwed up the first time? Yeah.
Yeah, we changed the time. Yeah.
That was it. And then I was just telling you that, like, that doesn't happen to me.
Yeah.
Because I'm so terrible that I've gotten good at making sure that everything's in my calendar.
Yeah.
And it has to be very detailed.
Right.
Because I was talking about how, like... I'll have somebody will come in and do a pitch and something or something, and I won't remember who they are or how they contacted me. It's really problematic.
I struggle with the same thing. I have three calendars that I keep so that it's always in my brain. Because mm-hmm. If I don't immediately put it into that Google calendar, it's lost to me. It doesn't
it just
exist
disappears.
Anymore.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So I really I struggle with that. So deeply, I mm-hmm. think I have my whole life. I'm just curious, how did you, as you started to advance career-wise, like what was it that really made you have to sit down and be like, this is how I have to operate in order to stay on top
of
my life?
Yeah, just dropping the ball a lot. Yeah. And when the show running is definitely a moment that teaches you how to do a lot with very little time. But I had an assistant then, so I don't have an assistant now. And when I made the conscious choice not to hire another assistant, because when I have an assistant, I tend to like really slough off.
Right.
And it's like, oh, they're going to take care of everything. I'm going to stay home today.
Totally.
So it's almost like they become such a crutch, and it's kind of really actually unfair on them because it's like, I just want them to do everything for me. So, and just be taken care of. So I don't have an assistant, which means I have to do all this stuff myself. But it's just learning and dropping the ball and being embarrassed enough times to not want that to happen anymore. And but then now it happened on this for this podcast. But again, yeah, it was I didn't change the calendar, but it was in there. But like, yeah, I have to put everything in there. Everything. If there's a pick up drugs, go grocery shopping.
Are you? Is your schedule like plotted out from the time you wake up to the time you go to
sleep?
Yeah,
it's nonstop and sometimes overlapping, and I have to make choices on the fly.
So. Ooh, that's hard.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
Go on.
You're like so bored.
Back to back.
Oh gosh, another busy person.
Shoes. Well, can I backtrack a little bit, because show running is a thing that we talk about in Los Angeles, everybody, for the most part, is connected to the entertainment industry and knows what a showrunner does. But before I got out here, I didn't know. Could you kind of give us, describe what that means in terms of what your job is, but also kind of how you touch everything through the creative process?
Yeah.
In TV, it's basically how you might think of a director in films, although we have directors as well, but they're directors for particular episodes. So you're overseeing everything, and you're really in charge of the writing primarily in TV, but you're approving. I work in animated shows, so it's approving every design and making sure that we have the right people hired, and just delegating to different departments and but you're ultimately responsible for like the quality of the show, and you're running it. You're doing it. It's hard to describe. It's like
show running. Just,
it's like being a CEO of a production. So it's like you have this business that pops out of nothing. You know, one day you're pitching,
right,
and the next day you're running a multi-million-dollar company with 200 people working on something. So it's just this you know, and you have managers and middle managers and producers and all kinds of people helping you out, but you're ultimately responsible.
You're at the top of the pyramid.
Exactly.
And so what's interesting to me is that not only are you then in charge of your own kind of care and well-being during this really stressful process, but then all these other people. I mean, is that something that you consider?
They're like relying on you.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very stressful. we hired a coach, Dr. Lois Frankel, who wrote like Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office and stuff. So she was kind of a career coach. I increased therapy to 3 days a week. Yeah, you just have to really take care of yourself and make sure that you're sleeping. And because if you, you know, it's that thing, if you stay up late one night, then you're messed up the next day. So you just have to be, it's just very regimented and you have to create a support structure. And it's a difficult job because it's so high pressure, but you have to look like you're handling it well at every turn. Ugh. And you can't really, you know, the team that you're leading, you have to be a leader and you have to make them want to achieve their best work. So you can't really complain to them or be stressed out. It's very difficult. You have to keep this face on, and then you have to navigate dealing with the network and their needs and then the team's needs. But yeah, there'll be a, you know, sometimes you'll have an employee that's suicidal or going through some stuff and, you know, you need to be compassionate for them. But then also it's a lot of like hiring consultants and bringing somebody in that's like, oh, this is a person that like is a woman of color who knows how to, you know, is an expert at like navigating the workspace for women of color. So why don't you talk to this person and, you know, and see if you can navigate this difficulty that you're having right now or whatever the, you know, whatever the identity is or whatever the person is. It's like find the best person for them to talk to, because it's not going to be me. And it's not going to be me when I'm running a show, because I don't have time to like have compassion. It's like, well, a weird thing Jill Salovey wrote in something. It's like, I don't have time to say hello to people in the morning. You end up being very like laser focused, and any amount of time just with even pleasantries feels like you're eating up the clock. You live minute by minute almost.
Oh. And also it
makes
just
me want to curl up in the fetal position.
Well, it's also like you were saying, one day you're pitching and you're in charge of so many creative decisions and you're a creative person. And then all of a sudden you're expected to kind of be a manager and running a company, like you said, of 200 people. And so to me, it feels like two completely different skill sets that you have to do at once.
Yes, for sure. It's so right brain and left brain at the same time. I think in typical TV pipelines, you learn as you grow. You know, you start as a writer's assistant, then you're a writer, then you're producing, then you're, you know, supervising, then you're story editing, and like you're working your way up to being a showrunner. But sometimes, like for me, I never had that path.
Right.
Or like someone like Dan Harmon is known for that. Or there's people that get it. And sometimes, like with Lena Dunham, you get a Jenny Connor, who's a more experienced person that's kind of helping you and guiding you and mentoring you. But I didn't, sometimes you don't have that, or you have conflicts with those people. So, yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, yeah. But also super gratifying,
right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you, you mentioned that you upped your therapy when you were, like when you're in a more intense work situation. And since we do talk a lot about people's self-care rituals, I'm just curious, what do you implement? Like how you know yourself, what do you kind of put out there to kind of keep you functioning, and what self-care rituals do you have on a small level too, like that you just kind of do every day?
Yeah, I think I meditate. I don't do that every day. Mostly for me, it's self-care at the most basic, like sort of mental illness level. I suffer from anxiety, and so I have to just manage that.
Yeah.
So it's mostly about just like making sure I take my medicine at night, making sure, okay, this is when you shower. And I try to be as regimented as possible to not like let my impulses influence any decision making. So I started showering at night instead of in the morning, just because it gave me like a little more time in the morning. It just worked out that way, I think. But that was like a lifestyle change. I got bought a pill box, you know, to like,
Dory's like a
love pill box.
You know, it's like, and then it's like, you just have to do that. Yeah. There's certain things like I love, like a Sunday farmer's market, cutting up vegetables, farmer lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, I eat those vegetables. I'm compulsive overeater, so I'll eat those vegetables very quickly. So it's not like, oh, I planned out my meals for the week or any of that really like, super cool getting things
right.
ready. Uh-huh. I'm not that person. I ate out a lot. I spent a lot of money on food. I did a lot of ordering. Postmates made a lot of money off of me during the show, like 3 meals a day at restaurants. But the but I like that. I like cutting up vegetables. I like having that moment. So if I can give myself that moment, it's weird that that'll be like maybe an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours, but it feels like it gave me like a week's worth of rejuvenation. There's something about cutting vegetables in a farmer's sink that just like...
You're in a Nancy Myers movie.
Yeah. That's a big one. So that's a big one. I have this thing where like after I've taken care of kids my whole life and I've always had a problem going to bed. So, and kids do that too, right? And like if you don't get the kids down at their bedtime, they turn into monsters. And I didn't realize that that was me too as an adult. Mm. And so now I'm just like... It hasn't changed. And why don't we talk about that more? I need to go to sleep when I'm getting sleepy.
Yeah.
Like a child.
Right.
Because if I like pass my little threshold, then I'm wired and I think I'm a great writer and I think I'm so productive and I fire off the 2, page long emails that didn't need to go at all. But no, you just kind of turn into the monster. So I'm really conscious of that. Like if it's about like 9 o'clock, I'll be like, I don't have a set bedtime. It's just like when I'm feeling tired, it's like, this is it. Let's do it. You have to do it now because if you don't, Jekyll and Hyde situation happens.
Are you really?
And that was from watching kids. And it's like, oh, it's so physiological.
I've never actually – I have 2 kids and I have – you're so right. And I like they reach that point that if they're not in bed by a certain time, they transform. Mm-hmm. And I have never thought about that in terms of myself. But now that you're saying it, it's so true. We still – Every human has that point where you pass it and it's like, well, the dark side's coming out because you're tired and you're not asleep yet.
Yeah.
And then you don't know why you can't go to bed at 2 a.m. It's like, oh, why can't I calm myself down or why can't I go to bed? It's like, well, the kids can't either. Like, it's just you because you made a mistake. So don't blame yourself.
I'm wondering if we can also talk about self-care in the context of activism, because you are very vocal on Twitter and elsewhere about being a trans showrunner and being trans. And I'm wondering, like, how you get gratification out of that, but also that's got to be pretty wearying.
Yeah, well, you have to be vocal about being trans because someone always brings it up. So that's basically how it is. I'm sure, like, as, women, you feel like, oh, right, I'm a woman again and have to think about feminism and think about. So I think that that's, I think that all trans people inadvertently become activists. Mm-hmm. And queer people I know are that way, too, just because it's like, shit keeps happening and you have to like say stop making this shit happen. So I don't think of myself as an activist at all. I just think of myself as somebody who like wants things to be done a certain way. It's almost like I'm producing the world or something. So I had a big incident with the TSA that was like international news, and Hillary Clinton talked about it and Congress wrote a letter and it changed policy at the TSA. But to me, it was just like, no, this shit is working wrong.
Right.
Let's discuss it. Let's like break this down like as a producer, So that's more how I guess I get activist.
Yeah.
It's like, this isn't right.
Right.
This is like stuff's falling through the cracks. Let's go back to the drawing board on some of this stuff. We missed some information.
Yeah.
So I think that's I'm less of a I've never thought about it in this way before, but I'm less of an activist and more of like a producer around my own life and like an advocate for myself.
Right. But by being an advocate for yourself, you're able to affect change.
Sure.
That,
yeah. And
that helps others.
That's what a producer does too, right? Like you're thinking about the whole team and you're trying to figure out where something in the production pipeline could go better. So I think that's why I end up being an advocate. And also, like, as a storyteller, you know how to tell a story a certain way. Not that I'm ever lying, but it's just you can be effective. And and I have, like, influence. It's just I'm in a position where, like, if certain people retweet, like, on the TSA thing, it was Tig Notaro's account. It wasn't even Tig, like, retweeted it. And then that the first articles that came out were, like, Tig is saying this thing.
Right.
And then it became more and more about, all these other celebrities started doing it. So when you have like a little bit of like enough of that influence that happens, now they're sick of it. Now nobody retweets me. But also Twitter's changed a lot even in the last 2 years. But yeah, I feel, I don't know, I have a sense of justice. I want things to work well. I want us to all be, you know, feeling a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
you guys created a podcast about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Feel the same way.
Yeah. I don't feel like I've solved anything for myself, but I do feel like at least just talking about the ways in which we don't feel good and are trying to feel right is important. I don't know what I'm saying. I've had too much coffee.
No, I think that's right. But I think also what you're saying also about being like kind of wanting things to be better for yourself, and then by virtue of talking about it, it ends up being better for other people. Like, I kind of feel that way about us too. Like, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but this is how I feel and how I'm doing things, and like, hopefully this will help you. But I, you know, when people ask us for specific advice about their situations, like, I don't always feel qualified to answer I'm not a professional.
I can barely produce my own life.
Yeah.
/ show run it. But I like the thinking about, I love the idea of thinking like you are the producer of your life and your situation.
Yeah.
And knowing how to run it and how you want it to go for yourself is really such an awesome way of looking at your own existence, I think.
Yeah, I think that just happened. So I don't know. let's work on that for a little while. But I think that's a quality, or that's the type of person I've grew up being. You know, I had kind of a tough childhood and ended up with a lot more responsibility than a 6 or 8 year old should probably have. So, you know, I'm just like trying to. Actually, Hardwick was really helpful. I don't know if you've read his self-help book, The Nerdist Way.
I haven't read it. Did you? No.
It's so weird that he has a self-help book. Like,
yeah.
And I don't think he even talks about it, but it's great. And when you have like a nerdy focused brain, it just puts things into context in a certain way. And it's been very helpful. So like for a long time, I was like, I'm too much or too anal or too intense or too bossy or too whatever. But now it's more like, oh, this is why I've also been in therapy for like 7 years, but like, you know, this is how my brain sort of works. And this is why I want this amount of control. And this is how I want to be taken care of. And this is why I'm upset at certain people or certain situations. And, and then if you put that spin on it, it's like, oh no, I'm producing instead of like I'm dominating.
Yeah.
Then it feels better.
Yeah. I was just reading this little bit about your show Danger and Eggs and how it was very healing for you to create it, which, by the way, my daughter loves it and calls it bacon and eggs, which we were watching a bunch of it. And the other day she's like, can we watch more bacon and eggs? And I was like, what? And then I realized what she was talking about.
How old is she?
She's five, and a 7 year old, but it was the 5 year old and I who were watching it. But I'm curious about finding healing in your work. I don't think everybody experiences that in their career path. And I just think that's gotta be a really interesting, gratifying experience, but also puts the stakes of what you're doing even higher when you feel when it's that significant to you.
Yeah, well, you just put some pressure on.
Sorry.
No pressure.
Yeah,
boy, the stakes are high. I guess so. I don't know. Obviously, not everybody gets that gratification out of their work, but when you're doing creative work, that's kind of what you want, right? Like, that's kind of, unless you're doing it for like a narcissistic way.
Which sometimes happens.
Sure. And we all have a little bit of that. But I mean, like a narcissistic way and like a narcissistic personality disordered way, like a really, like just you have such low self-worth that you're trying to fill it up with, you know, basically like getting narcissistic supply from praise and dominating other people and bringing them into your world. If you're not doing that, I don't know. I can't imagine doing creative work in any other way. And I did a lot of marketing and advertising work. And even then, it was like, oh, trick cereal. And it's like, but what is this about? You know, like, what are we really talking about? And I've been getting a lot of pitches. We have a really good relationship with Netflix. And they told me to, like, go out and actually get shows to produce, which is not really what I've been doing before. Usually I either get client work where somebody's like, hey, can you make this for me? Or like on Yo Gabba Gabba, that's how it happened. or it'll be, sorry, I have to breathe. I've been eating too much. I'm at the fattest I've ever been, so this is maybe not the best time to do this podcast. I've been eating not well. Or I just feel like in order for me to have a job as like a trans person, I have to create my job. And that's kind of just been the way that my world has worked. So I had to stop to breathe because I've been eating so much and I weigh like 280 pounds and like it caught me off guard now that I'm so winded just walking into a podcast studio, and the fact that there's no windows in here is like
overwhelming.
Yeah, it's wild. Like that's a weird. So let me just break down completely on your podcast.
Honestly, that's what we do every week.
Yeah.
This is a we're in a secret bunker, so it's a great place to break.
No, it's just weird that I'm like so winded from talking a little bit. But also, I think maybe I'm trying to make my voice sound higher because I'm on a microphone. There's a lot going on in there.
But that's a hard. But
you know what it is?
Yeah,
I'm such a mouth breather. I just remember I'm such a mouth breather that I've been holding my breath to not breathe into the microphone and to breathe through my nose.
Oh, you can mouth breathe in this podcast. But we can all take a moment to just like.
Every time I take a video, it's like.
I've had that experience also too, where something happens with your body and it catches you off guard, and then you're like, "Oh God, what's going on? What's going on?" Like you haven't even had time to process how you're physically feeling or existing in your body, and then you're just like, "Whoa."
Yeah. Well, we get to experience it live in the middle of your podcast. No, I was holding my breath to not be a heavy mic breather because on other podcasts that's been a problem. And I have a viral video from 2006 called Drunk Squirrel. You can
look
on YouTube.
Okay.
It's got millions of views. It was one of the very early viral videos. But it was the squirrel got drunk in my yard. And as I was filming it, I was breathing so hard, and there are thousands of comments about like, "You fat fuck, like why are you doing this?" Yeah, just thousands of like heavy breathing comments that made me like really nervous about doing anything.
You can't win when you exist in any way, period. But also you can't win.
No.
Well, I love the internet for that reason, right? Like Twitter, you can just post whatever picture you want. You can be as little as you want to be, as cute as you want to be, and it's just your words. You can delete it and edit it, or So
I'm
trying to get out into the world more.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Sitting across from you, I can't stop looking at your nails.
Okay.
They're so great.
And they're out of control.
But they're not. In my brain, I've been like, oh, these nails. What's the story of the nails? How do they make you feel? So Shadi's nails are beautifully done. I'm assuming they're gel.
They're gel. It's gel, and it's some nail art, and there's some jewels and gold and gold leaf. I got invited to Elton John's Oscar party.
Oh yes, I saw that on your Instagram.
So I got really femme, and I went and got these nails done. This is not my life at all. I never do this on a daily basis. I don't wear makeup or like care about my nails at all.
Do you feel different going through the world with those nails?
Oh, not in general, but sometimes I get like a little glimpse and I'm like, like it's just like a nice thing. And of course, like if I'm ever paying for anything, it's like, oh, those nails. And I'm like, oh, thank you.
You're like, your hand linger a little bit.
Or it's the opposite, or it's like somebody will say, I like your nails. And you'll be like, oh, I exist in the world. I'm not invisible. You see me. Like, it's a weird, all of a sudden it's like, no. We're just supposed to have like an interaction. I just want a breakfast burrito and then I want to go. But we're having this, now there's this intimacy involved that I'm not transparent. So that's the other problem.
I love
like
them.
Now, did you notice that I was just trying to hide them from you?
No, I didn't.
I was just like, oh, wait. Yeah. No, they're bananas. It was like a fun. I mean, I wanted to get like super glam, but like a little bit funky, and so I told her to just go nuts. So like every single one is different. You can look on my Instagram. Yeah, they're a little intense, but they're fun.
How was it getting glammed up for something like Elton John's Oscar party? I feel like that's like peak level of glamming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cool. My friend's a makeup artist. I went to the Critics Choice Awards this year too. So like this is a year of glam for me. There's been a few, like we've been award nominated for the show and stuff, and it's been like some really good glam times. And on a daily basis, I don't wear makeup and I'll just wear jeans and a whatever top, but like for those events, I get real femme.
It's fun. It's there's something fun about it.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it. Almost like you're becoming a not a character, but like a.
It's a mask, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You get to like feel. Yeah, it's just confidence. It's like Halloween.
You're in a costume.
Yes, yeah. But I'm intrigued by people who that's comfort space for them every day, because I like to enjoy feeling not invisible, but you know I'm dressed like a child out of an 80s movie right now. I'm
that's
like
true.
Converse and Levi's and a striped shirt. I look like I'm an ET.
You so know yourself. That's amazing.
I'm getting there as I get older. I'm starting to kind of understand more what fits me, like what makes sense for me, and stop trying to force myself into.
Dory, what's your fashion?
I mean, I'm wearing a jumpsuit right now, so I think I'm also
like school psychologist.
Yeah, I think a little like a little Matilda-y, like yeah.
You know, it's funny you say Matilda, because when people are like, "Who's your celebrity doppelganger?" people always say Mara Wilson is mine.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I would say, Shani, right now, you to me are like. Executive in an advertising meeting.
Oh,
is that
no.
weird? You've got a cool shirt with a zipper.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I feel like I would take business, like creative business advice from you.
I think of me as Nerd Butch. Like, okay. It's like this is a little bit like sci-fi to me.
That is sci-fi.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just like, I'm just like a little bit of a sci-fi budge.
Zippers kind of signify sci-fi for some reason to me.
To me, I'm still in a high-powered executive boardroom with a zipper.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know what planet I'm
on.
All right.
Yeah.
You're in the 80s.
That's why. I'm just a kid living in Oregon and an alien.
Everybody's just like
exactly.
Mommy's work.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's all mommy's work around.
Oh, boy, that's what I look like.
I completely lost a train of thought, and look at we're surviving.
Exactly. I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about 12 Forever.
Oh, yeah, that show's going to be great. Now I remember what you asked me about, like, having meaning in your creative
work. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I've been getting these pitches, and this sounds like a ripping on individual people. People who have pitched, you're doing great. But, you know, I'll read a lot of cold things. Or people will send me things. And there's almost never like a real point of view in it. It's so often just an imitation of a show. It's like, oh, it's like me and my friends, or it's like these people are doing this. And there's never like, I know something. It's kind of like what you were saying. Like, I still don't have it figured out. But I think like you do know something, and owning that you know something and then trying to present that perspective to the world is like the whole thing. It's like when I watch a television show, that's what I kind mm-hmm. of want.
Yeah.
You know, I want the person to try an idea out on me. Like, I'll love something like American Gods because it's like, you know, that's happening. Or like This Is Us. It's like there's a definite point of view. They never let like some thread go. It's like you do find out what Jack said.
Right.
And they go for it and they say it. And it's like it's courageous. And I feel so respected. So I don't know. I feel like that's just creative work. You need to try to put what you know there and share and present it in a way that's not like preachy or as not preachy as possible. Sometimes everything feels preachy if you're in that mood. But for 12 Forever, I think there's a really great point of view because it's Julie Vickerman created the show, and it's about this. It's basically about her experience as this kind of, you know, not particularly femme. I don't know if butch is the right term. You know, I don't want to like just boil it down to that, but not a particularly femme, kind of queer-ish, you'll have to watch the show to figure that out, girl. And she's 12 and puberty starting, and mm-hmm. she's dealing with that, and she doesn't really want to grow up, which is a common theme in children's stuff, but this is more like it's about her changing body. And so she wants to stay 12 forever, and she goes into this world, this fantasy world where she can kind of do that. But in this fantasy world, the manifestations of her fears kind of are the villains in the world. So there's this character called the Butt Witch, who's this gorgeous, like voluptuous, hippie, breasty, witchy Spider Woman character, voiced by Matt Berry with the deep voice and like, and that you know, represents like the growing fear of female bodies and not wanting to deal with puberty and that sort of stuff. And it's just really, it's about that. It's cool. It's going to be cool. It's really good. I'm so proud of it.
When does it come out? Do you know yet?
2019 sometime.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, Netflix. It's so fun. They're doing such a good job. I'm executive producing, so it's like a lot of times I'm just fixing somebody's computer or ordering paper. But like, yeah, they're doing an awesome job. It looks really good. It's very funny and real and nice.
I can't wait for that.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it does sound great.
Yeah, it's really great. It's going to be great.
Oh, Shadi, this has been so great to have you.
Yeah, really great.
Are we done?
I think we are.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about product.
Oh, fine. Do you?
No, I didn't want to. I didn't bring anything.
Great. Okay.
Laura Mercier tinted moisturizer. That's my only thing that I care about.
I mean, sometimes there are no products.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean? Sometimes I don't have any.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Laura Mercier tinted moisturizer is kind of a beacon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like an icon product.
Yeah.
Totally.
Everybody uses it, and they should.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time, and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home.
I have some gorgeous
planters, and then my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs.
Oh.
Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Shadi was amazing and inspiring, and I wish I was visually artistic so I could like do animation. Is that crazy?
No, it's not crazy. I feel that same urge all the time. All the creative things that I can barely do seem so cool and exciting and exhilarating.
Yeah. Kate.
Yes.
Last week, you were going to take an Epsom salt bath, and I said I was going to text you.
Oh my gosh.
And I did.
I know. It meant so much to me. And I have to tell you, so I did it. And then I was like, you know what? This is good for me. I'm going to do this every Sunday night. And I made a list of intentions called This Week's Intentions. And I include, can I read the whole list
to
you? Because this is kind of what I'm working on. Sunday bath. Every Sunday, I want to take a bath.
Love it.
I need to be in bed at 11 p.m.
That's every night or just on Sunday?
Every night.
Okay.
I haven't been doing that well this week, but I'm working on it.
Okay.
Exercise 4 times a week.
Okay.
I'm up to 2 times so far this week.
Great.
I'm also making myself read before bed every night, which I know you do.
Yes.
And can I give my current book recommendation?
Please.
I'm reading Stephanie Whittle's Wax's book, which is Everything is Horrible and Wonderful. Mm. And it's, she calls it a tragic comedy memoir of genius, heroine, love, and loss. It's about her brother, Harris Whittles, who was an amazing comedian here in LA. And it's...
And he died.
And he died of a heroin overdose. And it's so funny. It's so sad. It's heartbreaking and beautiful, but it's also like a page turner. The way she has it organized, it just makes it really fun is the wrong word, but it kind of is. It's just a really engaging read and I'm loving it. So I highly recommend Stephanie's book. Yeah.
That's so
like
great.
I can't put it down, which is, I don't always feel that way with a memoir, you know,
but
I'm very invested. Oh, and then I have one more thing.
Yeah.
Leafy greens at a meal every day.
Oh.
Because my dad was visiting last week. And I like prepared dinner, like very healthy meals for him. And then he was like, I need to make a salad. I was like, what? What's wrong with you? And he's like, my grandma, Elsie, said you always have to eat leafy greens once a day. And
oh my God, I love that.
Did it. He made himself a leafy green salad every night with like old kale that he found in my fridge. But then it kind of just really inspired me. And I was like, you know what? I should be eating more vegetables. So I'm trying to eat greens at least once a day, whether it's cooked in with something or a smoothie or a salad. So there you go. A little intention brought to you by Jim Spencer, my dad.
So are those your intentions for this
week? I just wrote them down. I've also been rewatching Sex and the City, which I have found very soothing.
So soothing.
So I just was like, you know what? I'm going to make a list of things I really feel like will make me feel better. So that's like will contribute to my well-being. So
that's
it's
so
a big
great.
List. I'm not hitting them all, but I felt really excited about that.
That's great.
Thank you.
I love that.
You last week set up for yourself that you were not going to stress about food at Disney.
For the most part, I didn't stress about food at Disney.
Were there times where you kind of did?
There was one time where I got like irrationally angry at Matt for not adequately informing me that the dinner we had reservations for was like a quote unquote fancy dinner. At one of like the nice restaurants at Disney. And so when I had a cream cheese pretzel like 2 hours before dinner and had the whole thing, I was like, why didn't you tell me we were having a nice dinner? I just ruined my appetite and like got like really upset, like in a way that was not called for.
Okay, it happens.
Tell
me more about what a cream cheese pretzel is.
Oh, they have them at Disneyland, too. They are very good. They are one of my top Disney food items.
Is it a stuffed pretzel?
Correct.
Oh, my God.
With cream cheese. It's very good. I actually think the ones at Disneyland are better than the ones at Disney World.
I need to, like, go back to Disneyland today.
Yeah, I can't believe you never had one. They're really... They actually don't sell them at every cart. They also have a jalapeno pretzel.
Oh, yum. With cream cheese, too? I love jalapeno cream cheese.
It might be just be cheese. I don't get that one. I get the cream cheese one. It's kind of sweet. It's really good.
I love the food at Disneyland.
Matt and I watched so many YouTube videos of the Disney food blog.
Yeah.
And we decided that they have bad taste in food.
Oh.
Like everything that they were like, this is a must try.
You tried it.
We tried it. We were like, this is vile.
My friend Amanda Hasaka has a Disney... Disneyland food Instagram that I will link to on the website that I find very fun to follow and very informative.
Good to know.
Good recs on there.
I bet she's tried the cream cheese pretzel.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So this week, you know, I know I've been mentioning this, but this week I've decided now, like April is here. I need like a real work schedule and I need to stick to it.
That's really hard to do.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to succeed.
But have you written it down yet? Have you kind of allotted time?
I have a proposed schedule written down And I'm gonna try to implement it next week. It's tough because like people will be like, can we have a call at blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, sure, I don't have anything. But it's like, I actually should have that time set aside for work.
I'm going to try this too, Dory.
Great.
That's a good plan.
Yeah. So that's that. That's my intention for the week.
I love it. Well, Dory, another podcast has come to an end.
Another one in the books.
Another one in the books.
Yeah. It was great to see you.
It was great to see you too. Should we just kick off this little outro?
Yeah, let's do it.
Here it is. Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Kate Spencer and Dory Shafrir and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Please leave us Apple Podcast reviews. It helps people find our show.
And Kate, you know who we're talking to next week? Well, I should say, you know who I talked to.
Oh, I do. Who I love.
Yeah. I interviewed my sister.
I'm so excited.
And I think it's a great interview. We talk a lot about being sisters. She's a lawyer. We have very different lives. And I think it's really nice. So I hope you all will enjoy it as well.
Dory's sister, Karen.
Yeah.
Next week.
Get ready.